Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik and Jessica Tai.
Yeah, I'm all for a white Christmas, but this is getting kind of ridiculous at this stage of the game. I don't think everything is going to melt by the time December 25th comes around, but boy, we are off and running here with our snow totals in the very early part of December.
And there was a time where, remember, they initially thought as they were tracking this most recent storm earlier that they thought in the Milwaukee area we were going to see more rain. And so there was a possibility that a lot of that snow would get melted away. But a lot of it is sticking around.
Yeah, very crusty. It kind of had that little, you know, when you have a thing of pudding. And
oh,
it's like
Greg,
that pudding skin on the top. You have to like pop through it to get to the pudding. That's what it feels like with the snow. You got that layer of kind of mucky slush ice, and then you get down and the snow's underneath.
See, I experienced slushiness, and I haven't had pudding like that since I was maybe 5.
Yeah, I often think they should sell pudding skin singles. I think that would be delicious. It's 12:09.
It's now at noon on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Two people are now in custody in connection to the deadly shooting of a child in Milwaukee. A 10-year-old was shot and killed last night near Clark and Velar Phillips on the city's north side. Shooting happened around 8:30 last night. Milwaukee police tell us they have now arrested a 36-year-old man and a 46-year-old woman. I asked if these two people are related in any way to the child. They are not giving us any information on that yet. They said this is still an active investigation. We also know a 16-year-old was also taken into custody for a separate incident. The Milwaukee District Attorney's Office will review the charges.
Well, the Federal Reserve wraps up its two-day meeting today. It's expected they will announce a reduction of its benchmark rates.
We're going to likely get a quarter of a percentage point reduction. That's great. It's going to help people who are borrowers because they're going to say, oh, maybe that interest rate on my credit card balance a little bit better, a little bit easier for the new car loan. But for savers, not so good because you're earning less interest.
And CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger, it would be the Fed's third consecutive rate reduction. Some signs of resilience for the economy. Markets are overall doing pretty well. The Fed is looking to make borrowing cheaper, however, for businesses and consumers to encourage spending. However, recent job growth has softened and uncertainty about inflation persists. Looking ahead to 2026, Redfin is forecasting that mortgage rates will remain right around 6%, but likely to be above 6% for 2026.
Cleanup is underway after our latest round of winter weather. Sound of the plows. Most of the snow has moved down to southeastern Wisconsin, but don't be surprised if you see a few flurries yet. City of Milwaukee has plows out right now, finishing up the main streets. Then they'll move into the residential areas, all those neighborhoods to get to. DPW reps tell us the crews are trying to get everything cleaned up before the slush freezes in place. You don't want that. Temps are falling right now, and a deep freeze sets in this weekend.
12:11 on WTMJ. Yeah, that's another sign of like January, right? We've got more snow than usual right now early in December, especially if you look at previous years. I remember being out probably the last 3 years without a drop of snow or a flake of snow on the ground, putting up Christmas lights right around this time of year and wondering, when are we going to see our first snowfall? And certainly wasn't worried about wind chills below zero like we have over the last week or so.
Yes, and that didn't seem like Wisconsin. The last few years just didn't seem like winter in Wisconsin. It felt like things were changing for good, maybe. But yeah, Mother Nature mixing it up this year.
Well, it is winter in Wisconsin. Will it feel like winter in Denver this weekend when the Packers take on the Broncos? Never know what to expect weather-wise out there. Jason Wilde covers the Packers. He is in Green Bay as the Packers begin the practice week. We'll check in with Wilde after this. Now at noon, sponsored by Flanners Home Entertainment. Check them out at flanners.com. Sound advice at the best price for Flanners. Just press play.
Wild horses keep dragging me away. And I'll lose more than I'm gonna win.
Packers head to Denver to take on the 11-2 Broncos on Sunday afternoon. It's kind of an obscure place to play professional sports because you got the altitude thing. It's not a very common opponent for the Green Bay Packers. And I was looking at the forecast here thinking, well, get the team outside, practice all week in the cold weather because you got Denver in December You got to play this game outside. Mm-hmm. I looked at the forecast for Denver, 62 and sunny.
It's going to be lovely.
It was beautiful, right? It's a late September day.
Well, you know Denver, they can get snow and then it can melt and be beautiful and warm the next day.
And no doubt.
Just like that.
Shorts weather for those covering the game. Jason Wilde covers the Packers expertly for ESPN Wisconsin. Wilde and Tausch, 9 to noon. And, of course, excellent work online at channel3000.com. Hey, Wilde.
So Gina does a phenomenal job as your producer. She's incredible, right?
Agreed.
And I'm always, every time I come on, I'm eager to see what song she chooses that would be related to who the Packers are playing that week. And so I've taken now to trying to guess it ahead of time. And I guessed Rocky Mountain High by John Denver.
That would have been a good guess.
And she went Wild Horses, Broncos, Garth Brooks, still great choice. But I she actually said that my choice was better. And now that I've heard Wild Horse, I don't think my choice was better. Mine was more obvious.
Yeah.
And she doesn't do obvious. So I think she wins.
I can't wait
till next week. Yeah, it was really well done.
Maybe before we get to the game here, Jason, coming up and where the Packers stand, maybe she'll have to play some music while wearing lederhosen. The NFL announcing games in Munich in 2026 and 2028. They have not announced the teams that'll play here, but I don't know why, but my mind said with all the German roots here in the state of Wisconsin that Munich would be maybe the perfect place for the Packers to play. They may not like it, of course. Overseas trips haven't gone terribly well for them. But my first thought was, oh, yeah, the Packers are playing in one of these.
Yeah, I had the same thought. And I also had the same thought when I looked at the weather forecast for Denver that you had. I've been to Denver a bunch. One of my good friends, Arnie Stapleton, is there. And, yeah, you'll get like 8 inches of snow in the morning, and by the afternoon it'll all be gone and you'll be playing golf. It's one of the strangest realms I've ever been in. But, yes, look, they are a slam dunk. If they don't go in 26, they'll go in 28. Like, I don't think there's any doubt. The question that I have, you know, and Mark Murphy made this comment on his way out the door. He said the team should be prepared that they intend to have teams play one international game at least every other year. Packers don't have one this year. I would think the 26 makes sense. They've got their own little fan base there. The NFL started doing these kind of organized fan base things, and the Packers are one of the designated teams in Germany. I will be very, very, very surprised if they are not one of the two teams playing in that game next season.
That would be an awesome trip to take. Meanwhile, we've got fans heading out to Denver for the big game on Sunday. Do you think that the Packers can beat Denver on the road? I mean, we've been on this hot streak. We're coming off this huge win against the Bears, but can we do it against Denver on the road?
So I must answer your question with a question, Jessica, and that is, I saw on social media that you were flying back from somewhere recently.
Yes. Oh, you
is
saw
that right?
Them. You did. I think I found the flight attendant, by the way, last night, which is a whole other story.
So when you travel, because one of the things that I miss from covering this team for the first 20 plus years and being on the road for every road game, I have a little bit of FOMO when it comes to that. But one of the things I would miss would be seeing the fans on the flight home on Monday as to whether or not they were all joyous or they were all hungover, even though the Packers won, or if they were downtrodden. So I'll be curious to see how they come back from Denver, but I won't be on the flights because I'll be here. I would say to your question, though, this is going to be a tough one. They got a really good defense, but I think they're 11-2, but I think they're a little bit, I don't want to call them a paper tiger, but I don't think that they're quite as good as their record makes it look. Now, they deserve credit, but as Matt LaFleur pointed out, they've been trailing. They had come back in the fourth quarter, 9 out of their 11 wins. They were losing in the fourth quarter. And so that you give them credit, obviously, for rallying, but I don't think they're an ultra-dominant team. I was surprised, frankly, that the Packers opened as favored in this game. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out for sure. And the one thing I keep thinking about, Packers beat the Bears last Sunday. If they lose and the Bears do what they should against a very bad Cleveland Browns team, although the Packers didn't do what they should have done against them earlier in the season, the Bears win, the Packers lose this, and we're right back where we started come Saturday the 20th. With the winner getting first place in the NFC North again, just like it was on Sunday.
You know, it just goes to show you just how muddled things are. The NFL scheduling system is just brilliant, right? I mean, it happens every year. A team goes from worst to first, or at least at the very least, in the playoff hunt. And that happens to be the case here right now in the NFC North division. As much as Matt LaFleur has got coach speak down, Jason, he is right in saying there's not a second to breathe, especially when you get to December, because of what you just mentioned. And if you look at the Bears situation, they were on top of everything. The NFC North, the NFC, and then one loss, and all of a sudden, they're hanging on by a thread here to the final playoff spot in the conference. So it can be incredibly damaging, especially this time of year, given where everybody is. So many teams are in it.
Yeah, and you would, to your point from earlier, like you would look at it and say, well, you know, it's out of the NFC. It's an AFC game. It's not a divisional game. Like, you know, while it's an interesting measuring stick game against the number one seed in the AFC, you know, it's not really going to affect your playoff standing. Well, actually, it really is. I mean, this is a critical game. You know, the weird thing about the Packers with that tie is that it kind of takes the tiebreakers and all the stuff about, oh, what's head-to-head and strength of schedule and this and that. It kind of throws that out the window. But you're right. It is, and the parity this season, you know, the NFL does a great job of making most teams feel like they've got a chance every year. But there's no doubt that this year, more than any other, it is muddled, to say the least.
So with the win over Chicago, the Packers sit atop the division, and they look playoff bound. But obviously, as we've been talking about, there's awareness that the season's back half still includes some tough opponents here. And any slip up, you know, could derail them. How sustainable do you think this momentum is for a playoff push with what you've been seeing over the last couple of games?
Yeah, I think they're a legitimately good team, first of all, Jessica. Now, in terms of momentum, man, like one of the things that's critical to that is staying healthy, right? I mean, the earlier this season, you were looking at the Indianapolis Colts going, wow, you know, they've revitalized Daniel Jones. They've got one of the best running backs in football with former Badger Jonathan Taylor. They're a force to be reckoned with. And now they're calling a 44-year-old grandpa out of a 5-year retirement. I mean, you think about Phillip Rivers, who I'm assuming is going to be their starting quarterback on Sunday. Like, he's a semifinalist for this year's Hall of Fame class. You have to be out of the league for 5 years in order to be eligible. He last played in 2020, and their season has taken such a turn that they're calling him out of retirement.
You think they call him Grandpa on the field? Grandpa, can.
I mean, he's got 10 kids. So, Pops, you know, I'm sure there's a joke or two about whether he and his wife live in a shoe. I don't know of a player that has done what he is going to attempt to do here. Like, look, Rodgers is 42. It's not that big of a difference, but yeah, to do this, to have been home and not playing football for as long as he hasn't been, and for him to be coming back is crazy. But my point is that you never know what's lurking around the corner in the NFL. And, you know, one example is Tucker Kraft. Was playing at, it might have been the best tight end in football, and then you lose him, and you saw what the Packers offense did the next couple of weeks. They struggled trying to figure things out. But it looks like right now they've got to figure it out again, right? They've got incredible contributions from Christian Watson, et cetera. But I'm just always leery of making any proclamations because you just don't know what's waiting for you around the corner.
You know, I shared the same thought as you did, Jason. When Kraft went down, I was like, oh, boy. Like, how can this team really compete for a Super Bowl without Kraft, who is having such an incredible breakout year? And that was sort of at the time Watson started to reemerge, at least practicing and then eligible and active and now contributing at an extremely high level. Does Watson's reemergence sort of make you rethink that idea? Oh, wait a minute now. Maybe the Packers can win a Super Bowl without Tucker Kraft because of what this guy's doing.
Yeah, I have reevaluated to some degree. That's a good question. But again, it just feels to me like Watson has now become not Kraft, but Kraft-ish, because he's the guy that tilts the field in their direction, right? I mean, look, Romeo Doubs is a good player, no doubt. He's kind of got a niche, though, right? Now it's third downs, it's red zone stuff. He didn't even have a catch the other day. I think Reed is going to give them a big lift. We've talked about it before that I think I underestimated how much they missed him. But if they're going to go as far as they might have gone with a healthy Tucker Kraft, they're going to need Christian Watson to continue at the pace he's at, because he has been phenomenal since he came back.
It's going to be a fun weekend of football, really, throughout the league. So many games impact what happens here in the NFC, including Packers and Broncos. 3:25 to kick Sunday afternoon from Denver. Jason Wilde, check out his work at channel3000.com and Talking Football with Tausch every morning on ESPN Wisconsin from 9 to noon. Always appreciate it, Jason. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, everybody, take care. Be good.
You too. 12:27, we'll call it on WTMJ News coming up. Then our conversation with CBS congressional correspondent Scott McFarlane. I mean, I have no idea what this is, but honestly, it sounds awful, Gina. Like,
it
I have
is
no
not,
idea what this is.
Not the best one. It's a little whiny, isn't it?
A little. I thought it was going to be like an R&B Christmas song. It certainly would be timely this time of year. Maybe Scott can help us
maybe
with this.
Maybe next week.
CBS congressional correspondent Scott McFarlane knows everything about 90s R&B. He joins us from the nation's capital. Hey, Scott.
That was heresy, what you all just said. That was
wow.
It just didn't
that
sound
was
very
cruel.
Good.
Did you like it?
That's Belle Biv DeVoe.
It is.
Really?
Which is a pioneering group in the history of R&B. And that was When Will I See You Smile, which was really their only ballad. I admit my wife thinks some of my music's a little too whiny. I guess 90s R&B ballads have a little whine to them. But we find that to be a virtue, not a flaw.
I think there's a reason that was the only ballad from Belle Biv DeVoe.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, Motown
somebody heard
Philly.
That one. They're like, let's go a little way. Motown Philly. That was a banger.
This is definitely not Motown Philly. All right, Scott, let's dive into what's happening out in your neck of the woods. Really, it started in Pennsylvania. President touting his economic record at a rally in Pennsylvania. It felt very much like a campaign trail sort of rally that we may have seen, you know, a little over a year ago, standing by his tariffs, suggesting that Americans may have to sacrifice a little this holiday season. $2 is enough. 30 might be too much, he says. Obviously, the economy is a big deal for President Trump, maybe the reason that he won back in November of 24. But what does recent polling suggest about his handling of the cost of living?
It's a real big problem for him politically, and it's both parties' voters who are saying as much. You have this pernicious issue of high prices for things you need to buy every week. You know, if you have to buy a car and it's too expensive, that's a problem that's going to bite you in a few years. But when the groceries are too expensive, when the Christmas gifts are too expensive, that's just punching you on a weekly basis right now. And that's causing a political problem for him. And as evidence that it's a political problem, he had that event last night in Northeast Pennsylvania that was to focus on affordability. And there were moments when he did, but there were more moments when he went off on a tangent, a campaign rally style tangent, complaining about things like Somalia, immigrants, things that were done to him politically about President Biden. It went all over the place in a somewhat predictable way, the way many of his rallies do. And he lost the plot line. So it's not clear that that's going to land the way it needed to land, that event. And also, you got to keep this in mind, Greg, and Jess, in this unique moment where we're watching clips as much as we're watching speeches, when we're seeing excerpts, more than we're seeing the whole thing a speaker says, those little clips about you should buy fewer dolls and buy fewer pencils, those can win the day. Those can be the things people hear from this speech, not the things where he was on message.
Well, here's the thing. I'm wondering what exactly the strategy is, because when you have the president coming out and saying we are crushing inflation and saying that prices are coming down, sometimes there's a strategy of if you say it enough, people just start to believe it. But the problem is people are going to the grocery stores and taking out their wallets and they're looking at the receipts. So I just wonder, I don't feel like this can work for affordability and when it comes to prices.
Every politician tries to talk up things during his or her tenure. That's the rule of politics. He's no different doing that. But he sure does have a recent example, doesn't he, of somebody who tried to talk up the economy when people weren't feeling it. President Biden. He talked about Bidenomics and how the numbers are good and the fundamentals are good no matter how people may be feeling or no matter what the vibe is. President Trump has uniquely loyal supporters, devotees, but even they know that happy talk about the economy does not match the reality. And again, I emphasize this because I think it's the kernel of the problem for him right now politically. People are facing this problem every day. The food price hits you every day. It's not an occasional stressor. It's a constant stressor. So happy talk's not going to patch over it.
CBS Congressional Correspondent Scott McFarland joining us. So interest rates are likely heading down later today. We expect an announcement in the next 15 minutes or so here, Scott. But they're not down far enough for Trump. He has hammered the Fed for not lowering their interest rates far enough and often enough. Does the Fed feel the pressure here? It doesn't feel like they've buckled under the pressure if they have felt it at all. But do you get the sense they are feeling any?
They're somewhat immune to it. They are to be an independent board of governors, though the president has obviously set his sights on one of those governors he's criticized, Lisa Cook, and caused trouble for her, caused legal struggles for her. But he's also been pretty clear he's going to name a new Federal Reserve Board chair when he has that opportunity in the middle of 2026. And he's been cagey about who it's going to be. But the guess here in the Beltway is that it's going to be his economic advisor, Kevin Hassett, who has been a loyalist to President Trump, and I think critics will argue maybe too politically loyal to President Trump in the role of Federal Reserve Board chair, which is to be a steward of the economic safety of America, to prevent another Great Depression, to prevent an economic calamity. The Federal Reserve has tools to prevent the economy from going south on us. If that becomes political, there's fear that it's not going to be as good a watchdog and safeguard as it should be.
Scott, I don't know about you, but I've never done a pull-up in an airport. I don't really have a need or a want to do pull-ups in the airport, but can you explain to all our fans why we are seeing Sean Duffy and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. doing pull-ups at Reagan National Airport?
That assumes there's a good explanation for that, but let me give it a try. I mean, let me give it a stab. The Transportation Secretary, Sean Duffy, who is one of the stronger media presences in this administration. He is particularly good on television. He comes from a television background, Fox News and MTV prior, does a lot of events, a lot more events than the Transportation Secretary typically does in Washington, D.C. And the Health Secretary, RFK Jr., is trying to get on message about family health and something that's a little less polarizing than some of his political positions. So they did this joint event at Reagan National Airport in Virginia about making airports more family friendly and more healthy. And they talked about having exercise spaces at the airport for people to use to stay healthy. And somehow that manifested itself into chin-ups in front of network television cameras. And I don't know why, but that was the image we all saw. It goes back to my initial point. We're in a political space now where the political actors realize no matter how long their speech is, no matter what they say in their speech, it's the clips that socialize, that get out there, that millions of people will see the chin-ups and very few people will hear what they actually had to say at that press conference. And they seem to be mindful of that, for better or for worse.
You need to have a correspondence chin-up contest here, Scott. I think you do very well. You got a long reach. You appear to have a very long reach, but I think you do well.
A plastic doll has better muscle tone than I do. I'm not sure that's going to work for me. But
fair enough.
I appreciate the loyalty, though, Greg.
I feel like the message is good here, and I think there are some people. I mean, especially if your flight gets delayed, I think there are some people who do want to get their blood moving in a different way. It just seems like, how far do we need to go? I mean, we certainly don't need and actually, didn't Duffy even say it? Like, we don't need a full body sweat going on until you stink, but just a little more movement, yeah, maybe.
We definitely don't need that. We don't want that under any circumstances.
Especially if I'm sitting next to you on the plane.
But look at that issue. There's a non-political issue everybody can set their teeth into, and the Trump administration maybe have more victories when it sinks its teeth into things that are apolitical, where you can get a broader conversation from people who aren't tribal or picking one side or the other. I think we're all in agreement. We all could use some more exercise or the opportunity to do more exercise, and we don't want the sweaty guy sitting next to us in the middle seat.
Hey, some additional news breaking today, Scott. A federal judge ordering another batch of the Epstein grand jury materials to be unsealed. But what's the reasoning behind it?
Three different judges, three different rulings in just as many days to unseal grand jury records. That seems pretty benign, doesn't it? Unsealing grand jury records feels very clinical, law schoolish. That is a rare thing. Grand jury materials tend to stay sealed and private by necessity to ensure investigations are not tarnished. But in this case, there's this newly signed law for the administration requiring they release the Epstein files, the full case files. So these judges have seen fit to unseal three different sets of records. Here are the three. The 2005 investigation of Epstein in Florida, the 2019 investigation, which Jeffrey Epstein was prosecuted in federal court in New York, and the 2019 investigation of Ghislaine Maxwell, his co-conspirator, serving a prison term for her role in sex trafficking. They now all can be released in some way, shape, or form, but it's anybody's guess when.
Scott, I also want to ask you, jury selection starts Thursday in the high-profile trial of Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan, who's accused of helping an undocumented immigrant evade federal immigration officials. This is a huge case locally, but not just locally. It's a huge case across the country. I know you were on it from the start. How closely will you be monitoring it from D.C.?
Very. It's one of a kind. It's still one of a kind. It was, at the time, a pioneering type of case. The Department of Justice, the Trump administration, prosecuting a member of the judiciary at the state court, the local court in Milwaukee. Hasn't been anything quite like that since either. So how this trial plays out is going to be of enormous interest. And it's been 7 months now for Hannah Dugan as a criminal defendant. What she musters in her own defense in this profound, if not provocative, case is going to be important. And I think the rest of the judiciary is going to watch this too, not just local judges, not just those who may be in the crosshairs of President Trump's criticism, but everybody will watch how this one-of-a-kind prosecution plays out at trial in front of, 12 jurors from the Eastern District of Wisconsin, which means it could be some of our neighbors, friends, or people up and down near the lake.
Always great information and great to connect with CBS congressional correspondent Scott McFarland. Scott, we appreciate it. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Scott.
I had your back today. I didn't note that you conflated Belle Biv DeVoe with Boys to Men. I didn't call you out for that. I let it go.
I didn't know it was them. I really didn't. I enjoyed Belle Biv DeVoe, but that one got lost in my arsenal of knowledge. Appreciate
Talk
it, Scott.
To you next week.
So we got a number of notes on our text line that our signal is not coming through the radio. So a couple of options for you, of course, if you're listening on the radio and you may not hear this. But should that be the case, wherever you are, you always have an option here if you're in your vehicle driving around with the WTMJ mobile app. So you can always stream our content live through your app if you got CarPlay. Very simple. You hit a couple of buttons on your screen and you're good to go. Otherwise, plug in that mobile device and connect it to your car's system and make sure you have the app and you can go that way. The YouTube stream, plenty
We're
of ways.
We're waving to you on the YouTube stream right
plenty
now.
Plenty of ways to get the content here. But yeah, we have a little signal issue going on.
Looks like
on.
You dressed up a little bit today too. People might be noticing that in the stream.
Well, I don't know. I appreciate you noticing.
Yeah.
Is
I
it
like
because
it.
There's a button and a collar? That usually isn't the case
there
for
is.
Me.
There is. I also really like the color.
Yeah, well, thank
it's
you
nice
for saying
color
that.
On you.
There's
yeah.
usually a hood involved if I'm wearing
this
it.
This is true.
Hey, if you need a little bit of advice or comfort this holiday season, how about heading off to your local Grandma Stand.
They've spread to more cities over the years. Stands on the street staffed by grandmas who offer free advice.
Grandmas are non-judgmental. We're loving people as a rule.
Grandma Nancy staffs the Grandma Stand in McKinney, Texas.
It's just nice sometimes to be able to talk to someone. It's basically a total stranger, but yet you can feel a connection with. If there's a choice of being unkind or be kind, choose kindness.
Absolutely. Michael Wallace, CBS News.
Well, sage advice from Grandma. I don't know if they're giving you cookies or telling you to kind of keep that shirt ironed, but yes, the Grandma Stand.
That is very sweet because so many grandmas are just so sweet and like they're soft. You know, their hands are soft and you give them a hug, they're soft. And they might have a little something in their purse, a little piece of candy. Maybe a lozenge to suck on or an Andy's chocolate mint.
Yes, Werther's Original, my grandmother's favorite. And anytime I needed a tissue, Grandma just pulled it out of her sleeve somehow, magically.
Out of her sleeve.
It was stuck in her watch, and she'd pull it out.
Oh, so it wasn't a magic trick? It was just kind of
felt
sticky?
Like magic to me.
Okay. Yeah.